You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
The world is constantly changing and transforming. Cut through some of the noise with What's New with Wired, a podcast that goes in depth on the latest news and technology and culture. Their award-winning journalism will help you make sense of what's happening in the world. Listen to What's New with Wired wherever you get your podcasts. That's What's New with Wired wherever you get your podcasts. We all know how important it is to keep your eye on the money, and not just your own. Stay on top of the latest financial and market news with Yahoo Finance, a podcast that releases new episodes almost every day. You'll hear a brief overview of the biggest news in the financial world, all in 3 minutes or less, right after markets close. Check out Yahoo Finance wherever you get your podcasts. That's Yahoo Finance wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Kick-Ass Politics. I'm Ben Mathis. Hi, folks. Before we start the show, I want to ask for your help. If you enjoy Kick-Ass Politics, I hope you'll help us reach our goal of raising our full production budget for 2016 by donating on our website at kickasspolitics.com or at gofundme.com/kickasspolitics. Thanks for listening, and now enjoy the show. Hi, I'm Ben Mathis, and welcome to Kick-Ass Politics. Why am I whispering? Because they're listening. What do you mean, who? Open your eyes, man. The New World Order, and the Illuminati, and the Freemasons, and the Bilderbergers, and the Council on Foreign Relations. They're all in cahoots with the CIA, Dick Cheney, the Rothschild family, an alien named J-Rod, those guys who worship a giant owl in Northern California, and the actors who faked the Sandy Hook massacre. They assassinated JFK, Princess Di, and Justice Scalia because those guys knew too much about what's under the Denver airport, who's really responsible for 9/11, and the reverse engineering of flying saucers at Area 51. Do I have proof? Of course not. That's how powerful they are. It's all a big cover-up. Everyone's been paid off or killed. What do you mean, so how do I know? You have to connect the dots. Ugh. You know what? Just forget it. Just close your eyes and keep burying your head in the sand. You're all sheep, man. You are all sheep. We've all had that conversation before. That nervous acting guy who talks down to you at a cocktail party and treats you like an imbecile if you don't believe that Elvis Presley is still alive and living with Hitler in an underground base in the Antarctic. Or that Stanley Kubrick directed the Apollo 11 moon landing on a Hollywood soundstage. There's a term for those people, conspiracy theorists. Or as I prefer to call them, paranoid wingnut loons. Well, they've met their match today because my guest is perhaps the foremost expert at disproving conspiracy theories, pseudoscience, the paranormal, and just plain nonsense. He's Dr. Michael Shermer, founder and publisher of Skeptic Magazine. He's also a distinguished presidential fellow at Chapman University and writes a monthly column for Scientific American. In addition to that, he's a frequent contributor to Time Magazine, and he's appeared on such shows as The Colbert Report, 2020, Dateline, Charlie Rose, and Larry King Live. He's given 2 TED Talks, which were voted into the top 100 of the some 2,400 TED Talks given to date. And he's written 14 books, including his latest, called Skeptic, Viewing the World with a Rational Eye. Today, Michael Shermer will outline a simple way you can put conspiracy theories to the test. He'll explain the psychology behind conspiracy thinking and how much of our predisposition toward conspiracies is actually a holdover from the completely rational survival instincts of our caveman ancestors. He'll talk about what kind of people buy into conspiracy theories, and he'll raise serious concerns about conspiracy theories going mainstream as media figures like Alex Jones and Jesse Ventura perpetuate a cycle of delusion and paranoia. Plus, we'll cover the moon landing, anti-vaxxers, Sandy Hook, 9/11, the Denver airport, the death of Vince Foster, the Illuminati, the Bilderbergers, Area 51, chemtrails, fluoride in the water, and much, much more. when we put those and other wingnut nonsense to the ultimate test with my guest today, Skeptic Magazine's Dr. Michael Shermer, in just a moment.
Hollywood to Washington, it's time for Kick-Ass Politics. And now here's your host, Ben Mathis.
Today I'm joined in studio by Dr. Michael Shermer. He's the founder and editor of Skeptic Magazine and Skeptic.com. He also writes a monthly column for Scientific American, and he's a presidential fellow at Chapman University. He's written or co-written 14 books, the most recent of which just came out this January, and not surprisingly, it's called Skeptic, Viewing the World with a Rational Eye. Dr. Michael Shermer, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Well, I've been wanting to do an episode on debunking conspiracy theories for a while now, and it became a little more timely for me because just a couple of weeks ago, Justice Antonin Scalia passed away, and I got into it on Facebook with a friend of a friend who was fueling this idea that somehow Scalia was assassinated and he was demanding an autopsy. I wrote a comment, which I thought was fairly innocent. I said, I think Scalia, maybe, you know, he might have gone out like David Carradine went out, which if people don't know, look it up. And he got irate and offended. And I replied, you know, there's just as much evidence to prove my theory as there is to prove yours, which is to say there's zero evidence.
Yes. So, yes. Well, so, you know, you weren't there. I wasn't there, you know, so we don't know for sure. But, you know, what's the convergence of evidence toward the likeliest explanation? You know, he had heart disease, high blood pressure, cardiovascular disease. You know, he was old, 79 years old. He had a whole host of health problems. You know, and he just died in his sleep. It happens, you know, 10,000 times a day. That's perfectly normal. Or that, you know, he was assassinated. Okay, so the likeliest explanation is the former. So if you want to challenge that, so here's how we think about conspiracies like that. And the general principle, the skeptical principle at work here is the burden of proof. The burden of proof is on the sort of the outsider, the challenger to the mainstream theory.
But what about there was a pillow over his face, they said.
Actually, somebody tracked down the maid or whoever opened the door, and they said it wasn't over his face. It was sort of propped up behind his head. You know how, like, you're in bed and you prop up the pillow behind your head and you're watching TV until you fall asleep?
Yeah.
It was just like that. It wasn't, like, smothering him.
You know, I just want to know why we haven't had an autopsy of Harper Lee.
Yes, she, Harper Lee is a now there's a conspiracy.
Within a week of each other. That's not iffy.
Yes. They usually go in threes, you see.
Yeah. What is that? The three
theory?
Oh,
it's patternicity, just the tendency to find meaningful patterns in random noise. There is something about threes, the good, the bad, and the ugly, and, you know, location, 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 ready, set, go, on your marks, get set, go. You know, there's a whole bunch of these things that comes in threes that our brains notice. The reason is if you think about this for a second, if you hear like a knock, like you think, huh, I wonder what that was. If you hear... like, whoa, wait a minute. I wonder if somebody's at the door. But if you hear, you think somebody's at the door. So the third data point makes for a pattern in our brains.
Well, let's talk about that as it applies to conspiracies. You have a master's in psychology, and you've written several books, such as The Believing Brain, in which you analyze why people believe in irrational things. Explain to me why human beings are so prone to conspiracy thinking.
Conspiratorial thinking is a form of patternicity. That is, you're looking for and finding patterns in the world, and there are patterns, you know, and it's a good thing we're able to do this. It's called learning. You know, A is connected to B, and oftentimes they really are connected causally, and it's a good thing we can make that inference, or else we wouldn't learn anything and survive. So what I'm arguing is that people believe weird things not because they're stupid, uneducated, or whatever. It's that all of our brains are wired up to find connections and patterns. My thought experiment is, imagine you're a hominid on the plains of Africa and you hear a rustle in the grass. Is it a dangerous predator, or is it just the wind? Well, if you think the rustle in the grass is a dangerous predator, it turns out it's just the wind. You've made a type one error, a false positive. You thought A was connected to B, but there's no connection. Huh. But that's a harmless error, relatively harmless error to make. You just sort of move out of the way or whatever, no harm. But if you think that the rustle in the grass is just the wind and it turns out it's a dangerous predator, your lunch. There's a cost. It's a high cost error to make. That's a false negative. Okay. That's a type two error.
So it's better to be safe than
better
sorry.
Better to be safe than
or
sorry.
Paranoid
exactly
than sorry.
Right. Okay. That's right. So it's kind of strategic paranoia. You know, just to be on the safe side, let's assume that rustles in the grass are dangerous predators. Let's assume the patterns we see are predators, are bad people, are conspiracies, even though they may not be, because the cost of making one error is more than the cost of making the other error. Now, in the modern world, it doesn't necessarily take us out of the gene pool, but in our evolutionary ancestry, it might have. So there was a selective pressure for assuming that everything you encounter, almost everything you encounter, is real, just in case. So just the mere comprehension of an idea is associated with believing it, such that disbelieving it or being skeptical or challenging it is a whole nother step. It's a heavier cognitive load because you have to understand what the thing is that you're looking at or studying, and then go one step further and go, you know what, I don't believe it. So that takes another layer. It's like lying. To lie, you have to know what the truth is, and then a layer on top of that is the lie. So that's a heavier cognitive load.
Interesting. So it's basically a survival instinct gone wrong.
Yes.
Interesting.
Now, of course, we vary. Yeah. You know, you have the Alex Joneses of the world that think everything is a conspiracy, or the Jesse Venturas. I just did his show a few weeks ago.
Oh, really?
You know, everything is, you know, he's never met a conspiracy he didn't like. It's like, okay, if everything is conspiracy, then nothing's a conspiracy. It doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
So we have to be able to distinguish.
Well, yeah, and as you just said, there are real conspiracies out there. You know, they're few and far between, perhaps, or they're much more innocuous than people assume. What are examples, aside from, let's say, Watergate or the Monica Lewinsky scandal, what are some examples of real conspiracies that turned out to be true?
Yeah, it's an important point to make, because what do we mean by conspiracy, and what's the difference between conspiracy and conspiracy theory?
Yeah, how would you define that?
Yep, so a conspiracy, by definition, is just two or more people plotting to do something to a third party without them knowing about it. So by definition, 9/11 was a conspiracy. I mean, 19 members of Al-Qaeda plotting to fly planes into buildings without telling us ahead of time, that's a conspiracy. And so there's lots of them. And this goes on all the time. You know, in corporations, they're going to do this, and government agencies are going to do that. But conspiracy theory is a different thing. That's where people formulate ideas about what they think is going on. And that's where we get into trouble. So, but the question is, which ones are the real ones or which are not?
And the ones that prove to be true, they usually don't involve hundreds and thousands of people keeping their mouth shut. It's usually, you know, Watergate was like, what, 3, 4, 5 guys
Watergate is a great example, because here you have the most powerful administration in the world. And at his fingertips, he could have the best spies and whoever, and they couldn't even break into a hotel room and pull it off. You know, and so in my conspiracy detection kit, in my, you know, we have this in Skeptic magazine. So there's certain criteria. The more people that have to be involved, and the more elements that have to come together at the right moment, the less likely your theory is to be true, because A, people are incompetent. They make mistakes, they chicken out, you know, I don't want to do it, or they bumble and fumble, and you know, the more people you have, the more are likely to tell somebody who tells somebody. Before you know it, they're on some show talking about it. and also the more elements that have to come together. You know, if you have just one or two people just have to do one or two things to make it come off, not so hard. But if you have, you know, thousands of people have to be at the right spot at the right moment, and everything has to go just right, like an old episode of Mission Impossible, where everything has to be just right to make it happen, and that's not how the real world works. So, like, you don't have to know anything about 9/11 minutia, like thermite and secret thermite and super secret thermite and all this stuff, you know, what was in the debris. All you have to know is that. We all know that the planes hit the buildings. You can watch it on TV. And so what the truthers want to do is add another element to that, and that they also implanted explosive devices. Okay, wait a minute. We know you can see where the buildings began their collapse at the point where the planes hit the building. So the people planning the explosive devices would have had to know in advance where, what floors that to place those explosive devices, and
oh,
at the
yeah,
angle.
That's a lot of coordination to figure out the plane and the planting of the bomb on the same
right.
level.
That's
huh?
right.
Oh,
and yeah. furthermore, these are two of the most secure buildings in the country.
Yeah.
Because remember, they terrorists attempted to blow up the building back in 1993.
Yeah.
So the security in those buildings is intense. So how did these people get in there to plant these explosive devices? And you have only to go on YouTube and watch people that do this for a living and how they do it. They go into these
demolition
old buildings.
Experts.
Demolition experts. Yeah. You have to knock out the drywall, you know, like this drywall here. Mm-hmm. You have to, and get into the beams that the structure supports that hold the building and wrap those in these explosive devices. How do they do that in these buildings with people? There are 50,000 people working in those buildings. How do they pull? Oh, well, you know, they were pretending to be elevator repairmen, you know, like in a Mission Impossible episode.
Yeah.
People watch too much TV. You know, this is not how it works. You'd have to, you know, break into drywall in hundreds of these offices to get to those beams. On the, it's just crazy.
Well, they just bought those people off.
Yes.
Or they had dirt on them.
And this is
Isn't
Jesse Ventura's
works?
Argument. Jesse says that, well, you know, in black ops and stuff, you buy people off, you pay them, and you make them keep secrets. And, you know, and it's true that, you know, that top secret agents do keep secrets. In Burbank, during the Cold War, was the Boeing had like an X project type offices there where they did all this stuff for decades and nobody knew. It was right here in Burbank. And so it's true. Sometimes that can happen for a while. But the more people you have, the less likely everybody's going to keep their mouth shut. You know, not one person told his girlfriend who told her friend who, you know, and then before you know, because that's what happens.
Yeah.
And here's where you know that conspiracy theories go off the rail is when they become these sort of global, international, take over the world,
yeah.
run the world's economy. You know,
Bond villain stuff.
You know, yeah, Bond villain stuff. The bigger the scale, the less likely your conspiracy theory is to be true. Real conspiracies are like, well, let's fund this third world dictator. We don't like him, but he's better than the other dictator, and we have you know oil reserves there or troops there or you know something. That kind of stuff goes on all the time, as we know, and there's probably more we don't know, and so this is one of my counters to the 9/11 truthers. You guys are misdirecting attention from the real stuff. And all those South American dictators in the 70s, you know, when Kissinger was, you know, messing around, we're going to fund this
right.
and fund that, we're going to do this and that. All this stuff is now coming out. Okay, that's a conspiracy. Because, you know, did Congress ever, you know, our elected officials, did they approve all of those little actions? Probably not.
Yeah, no, that's true. And, you know, and that also kind of brings up an interesting point, because it seems to me that it would be very hard to pull off large-scale conspiracies in an open society. Now, Vladimir Putin in Russia, yeah, you probably do have people who die in spectacular, you know, poisonings and all
Radiation
these crazy
poison,
ways
yeah,
that
yeah.
you never would imagine. But in this country, I mean, we can't keep a secret.
That's right. And that's one of the benefits of living in an open society is that there's less likely for conspiracies could still go on. But we're more likely to find out about
yeah.
him. You know, the assassination
yeah.
of Lincoln, again, we knew it was a conspiracy within minutes because the other assassins attempted to assassinate the vice president, the
right.
secretary of state, the secretary of war. You know, they were going to decapitate the entire administration.
Yeah.
And, you know, within hours, they were tracking him down. Within days, you know, it was done. And that's what really happens. You know, that JFK was a coup and all that. Okay, where are the other assassins? Who did it?
I guess I've heard other people say this before, that among conspiracy theorists, there's something that gives them some sense of peace or power in thinking that there's a much, much bigger thing at play here than just the randomness of a lone gunman or any nut, you know, can take out the most powerful man in the world.
Yeah, so this is a form of cognitive dissonance where we're looking for an equal size cause to an effect. So if you take something like the Kennedy assassination, you know, so here you have the most powerful person on the planet, you know, charismatic and handsome and intelligent and so on, and he was assassinated by who? Lee Harvey Oswald. I mean, this is a nobody, a lone nut. So there's an imbalance there that feels dissonant. We want to balance it. princess die. You know, it's cause of death, speeding, drunk driving, no seatbelt. Yeah. This happens 30,000 times a year in America. It's so common. But princesses are not supposed to die like that. Yeah. You know, she's beautiful and famous. And so it must have been that we were looking for a cause of equal. So think of the Holocaust. You know, it's one of the worst genocides in human history, caused by one of the worst regimes in human history. It feels like, yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, you would expect that.
But, you know, 9/11, and oh boy, it brought down America, blah, 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 by 19 guys with box cutters. You'll hear this. Yeah. 19 guys with box cutters. Come on. Actually, in an open society, that is how it would happen. Because you don't notice people walking around with box cutters. They're just, they just sort of slip into the nooks and crannies of a free society. Who noticed that they weren't taking landing lessons, just taking off lessons? You know? Yeah. So.
Yeah, you're looking for something much bigger than that, I guess.
Right.
Because it's like, how do you make that leap from saying, okay, Big Pharma is in business to make money, to they're trying to keep us sick and give our kids autism, you know, to what purpose?
Right.
I have no idea.
Well, but there's also something about powerful people in organizations, that people that are not in those organizations from the outside assume that they're more powerful or bigger and have more control than they really do. So this is kind of a conspiracy theory that I have, that, you know, when you're elected president, they take you in the back room and they go, okay, here's what's really going on in the world. You can't close Gitmo because of blah, 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 blah. If you pull the troops out now, then oh my God. But I told everybody, yeah, don't worry about it. They all tell people, you know, they all have these campaign promises. So I think that is the case, that, you know, you know, why can't the CEO just do that? Well, they just can't. You know, they have boards of directors, their checks and balances. You just can't do everything you want to do.
Yeah. And I don't know if it was on your website or somewhere else that I read that talked about the demographics of conspiracy theorists. And the one thing that they generally tend to have in common is that they are the people out of power. They are essentially the losers in society.
Yeah.
And they're trying to rationalize why they're not getting what they deserve.
That's right. The powerless want to get power, or at least they want to have a voice in it, which is really driving the current election campaign. Yeah. You know, just the anger. You know, when you have Trump and Bernie saying, you know, we're sick and tired of these corporate or government, you know, agents do it. You know, the average goes, yeah, yeah, I don't like that. Yeah, how come I don't have any of that power? You know, it's kind of feels like I'm sending my guy in there to stir things up because it feels good.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. And then when we come back, we'll go through the list one by one as Dr. Michael Shermer debunks some of the most popular conspiracy theories. When we come back in just a minute. If you're enjoying my conversation with Dr. Michael Shermer, then you should read his newest book, Skeptic, Viewing the World with a Rational Eye. And right now, you can download the audio version of his book for free with a special promotion for our listeners from audible.com. Just go to audibletrial.com/kickasspolitics for a free 30-day trial and a free audiobook download, which can be Skeptic by my guest today, Dr. Michael Shermer, or any of Audible's 180,000 titles for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, iPad, or MP3 player. That's audibletrial.com/kickasspolitics. Or click the sponsor link on our webpage to download the free audiobook of your choice. And now, back to the show. We're back, and I'm talking with Dr. Michael Shermer, editor and founder of Skeptic Magazine. Well, Michael, we all have this image of the tinfoil hat-wearing paranoid loser in their mother's basement on the computer, but it turns out that the demographics of conspiracy believers actually are much broader than that. So tell me, who are conspiracy theorists?
Well, it could be everybody, all right? So, the demographic studies on this is, again, what you just said. It's not, you know, uneducated, basement dwelling, living with mom. You know, it could be anybody. And that matches my anecdotal evidence that, you know, the people I meet, JFK conspiracy people or 9/11 truthers, they're not dumb. They're not uneducated. Most of them have jobs and families, and they just kind of do this on the side. They're just into, you know, everybody has a hobby, I guess.
As entertainment or what?
No, not entertainment. Maybe a little bit, but mostly it's stimulating. Like, I'm going to track this down. I'm going to study this and figure out the temperature that steel melts and the, you know, the flames in the World Trade Center buildings were only burning at 1200 degrees, but it takes 2500 degrees to melt steel. Ah, I've got something. And then that leads them down a track. And you know, people have a lot of free time on the online.
So it's replaced the model train room or something as a hobby.
And as a stimulating one too. And if anything, the smarter you are, the more educated you are, the better you're able to draw connections that maybe somebody else wouldn't. Connections that may not actually be there.
Yeah, and that's one thing that surprises me. Somewhere I read that 1 in 5 people with postgraduate degrees are highly susceptible to conspiracy thinking. You know, I have friends who are college professors and lawyers, and you know, I have one close friend. He's a psychiatrist, very widely respected, graduated from Johns Hopkins, top of his class. And he would swear that the Queen killed Princess Di and JFK was killed by the mafia, the Cubans, and the CIA all working together for the first time in history. How do smart people fall for this stuff?
Yes. Intelligence and education are orthogonal to belief. That is, they're independent.
Oh, okay.
They don't necessarily have one thing to do with each other. So beliefs are things that all of us form, and that's just something our brains do naturally. And to the extent that you're super smart and educated, is only going to affect your beliefs to the extent you can rationally defend them, come up with clever arguments and so forth. And educated, smart people are better at doing that. Mm-hmm. They read more, they go to more web pages, whatever, and they construct these arguments in their head, and they tell them to you. That sound, you know, more intelligent. And so again, they're separate things. Belief is now there's going to be a range of, like in any human characteristic, that varies. Some people are more gullible, some people are more skeptical. Mm-hmm. And there's some gender differences on the subjects that people are interested in. Creationists, you go to like a Holocaust denier, creationist, 9/11 truth, it's almost all guys that are there.
Okay.
Other beliefs like astrology, psychic stuff, there's more women there.
Right.
And blacks tend to be more conspiratorially minded about like the AIDS virus or crack cocaine, you know, that the government was planning crack cocaine in downtown Los Angeles in the 80s, or that AIDS was invented to destroy the black community. You know, whites have other kinds of conspiracy. You know,
there are no clean hands here.
That's
what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And politically, again, it varies. You know, Republicans tend to believe certain conspiracies about, governments that are doing bad things, and Democrats tend to think it's corporations doing secret bad things. And, libertarians, they think everybody's doing bad things, both left and right. This is why it's an interesting, the whole anti-vaccination movement, you know, this across both political things because, you know, because the CDC, big government agency, is involved, and big pharma, you know, corporations, you know. So if somebody's making a profit or has some kind of political control, must be bad. So
it's a bipartisan conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
Okay. Finally, something that brings us together. Can we dispel that? Is there any shred of evidence that vaccinations cause autism?
None at all. Not a shred of evidence. Right. And there never was. There was only one study done by this guy named Wakefield that was debunked. And then it turned out to be a fraudulent study. And so not only was the study withdrawn from the publication, the journal that it was in, but he was disbarred, not disbarred. That's what lawyers do to lawyers. He was, his medical license was taken away. He can't practice medicine anymore.
That.
I mean, it's totally right. But the meme somehow got out there. The reason is just because of anecdotal thinking. So you have a population of people that get vaccinated, which is most everybody, and then you have a smaller population of people that get autism. And by chance, they're going to be overlapping. Those two Venn diagrams are going to overlap. So and in time, so parents that get their kids vaccinated and then, you know, they start noticing something wrong just by timing, they take the kid to the doctor a couple months later, your son has autism. Well, what would cause that? Well, we don't know the cause. What's the last thing we did that was the vaccinations? That was it. So, you know, so it's reinforced by anecdotal thinking.
Well, what do I say to the people who say, well, if you look at the history over the past 20 years or 30 years, whatever, you know, the incidence of autism has skyrocketed.
Yeah. Well, okay. They have, okay. It's a, it's a product of two things. One, the expanding category of what constitutes autism. You know, it's a spectrum disorder.
Yeah.
And over the last couple of decades, who gets diagnosed as autistic has gotten broader. I mean, there's more people because the category is broader.
Yeah.
The number of characteristics, behavioral characteristics that a physician may see in a child has broadened. The list is longer. So the more things you see, the more likely you are to say, yes, I think he's on the spectrum. And so that category gets filled up with more people. So it looks like there's a spike going up there. And then the second effect is that then you're more likely to start looking for those things and throw it into that category. Whereas before it would have been, oh, your son's just a little, you know, unusual. Don't worry, he'll be fine. And oftentimes they are fine.
I've never met someone who might say, okay, 9/11 was an inside job, but then at the same time believes JFK was assassinated by a lone gunman or we really did go to the moon. Explain, why is this such a slippery slope?
Yes, well, it's not so much a slippery slope as characteristics of people tending to believe or not. So as I mentioned earlier, there, you know, there's a variation of propensity to be gullible or skeptical, and that those that are slightly on the more gullible side, once you tick the box for believing X conspiracy, you're likely to believe most of them. Huh. And it's not just conspiracy theories. I mean, people that believe in, say, psychics or ESP or astrology are also more likely to believe in Bigfoot and the Loch Ness Monster and aliens are visiting and the whole host of things. So it's a belief propensity.
Why can't they discriminate, though?
Why can't they? It's just sort of a more open-mindedness. So if we think about, like, you know, how many new beliefs should we incorporate into our thinking process, you don't want to be so skeptical you never learn anything new because you just don't believe anything.
Right.
But on the other hand, you don't want to be so open-minded, as we say, that your brains fall out and you believe everything. So there's the rub there is that balance. So that's what we need, the tools of critical thinking, skepticism, and science to be able to tell the difference, you know? And so it's like, I'm Mr. Skeptic. I have a column called Skeptic. I have a book called Skeptic. So what, you don't believe anything? No, I believe all sorts of things. Again, a good scientist should just be open to the evidence.
Yeah.
But on the conservative side, that the burden of proof is on the claimant challenging the theory. I'm getting inundated now with alternative theories of physics about gravitation waves because that's in the news, right? You know, it's, you know, there aren't really gravity, they're electromagnetism. It's really a part of the electric universe, for example. Okay, look, the core theory of physics has been established for, you know, a century now since Einstein and for over three centuries since Newton. So the burden of proof is on you to your alternative theory to explain all the things that the current theory can explain and the anomalies, the weird stuff that the current theory can't explain. My friend Michio Kaku, the cosmologist, string theorist, he actually has on his webpage, like, if you have an alternative theory of physics, click here, because there's so many of them. Yeah. And then it has a list of things. Your theory has to be able to explain, you know, the relationship between the proton and the neutron, and the electron, and this and this and this. He has a whole long list. And if it can't, then don't bother me.
Well, one of the things that's interesting to me is that a lot of times you have people who buy into so much, whether it's conspiracies or pseudoscience or whatever, that they end up buying into contradicting theories. You know, like Princess Di, she faked her death, but also at the same time, it was a conspiracy by the Queen in MI6.
Right.
How does that even work?
Well, it doesn't work well. It's a product of what I call logic tight compartments. People just keep things separate in their brains. Now, obviously that one, you know, Princess Di faked her death and she was assassinated, obviously can't be true. But again, it's that general tendency that once you go down the rabbit hole of thinking, well, everything's a conspiracy, then you just find them everywhere. And so you begin contradicting yourself. So that's the time, you know, you should pull back and go, well, wait a minute. Not everything's a conspiracy. And the other psychological problem we have is randomness. We have I mentioned this earlier, but just more globally that, you know, the world is very chaotic and unpredictable. There's so many variables at work, it's hard to predict. And so, like an economy, how does an economy work? Wow, I mean, this is a whole field, the science. You get a PhD in this, you can get a Nobel Prize in this. You know, this is a science that dates back three centuries. And still, you know, they have a hard time predicting, you know, the stock market goes up, goes down, who knows, oil, price of oil, no one can explain the price. Okay. You know, so the world, so for the regular person, it's like, well, I think it's 12 guys in London, the Illuminati, they're running the show. And and those people that meet at Davos, you know, they must be plotting out the price of oil, or they're going to figure, you know, there are conspiracies in business and finance, you know, but the global running of an economy, nobody can do it, and you can't predict. It's very difficult to predict.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not so far fetched to believe that, you know, obviously there are economists and think tanks and governments who think free trade is a good thing, and, you know, would very much like for the world to be a little smaller and communication to be open and so forth. But then they take this gigantic leap to, they want to dominate the world, they want to enslave us, they want to reduce the population in some kind of sinister thing.
Yep.
It just,
President Obama goes out of control. Has FEMA building concentration camps in Texas to put Americans.
Is that one? I haven't heard about that one.
Yeah, there was a last 2 months ago, there was a military operation in January, military operation in Texas. It was just a planned, we're going to go practice whatever they were doing, tanks and moving troops. And, you know, you can find places in Texas that are sort of like the Middle East. It's hot and dry. And, you know, like, let's go practice.
I'm from Texas. I can vouch for that.
So, you know, it's like, okay, let's go practice. Okay, so now, you know, people see all these troops and tanks and, what's going on here? Pictures. And before you know it, on the internet, and then you have people like Alex Jones going, oh, FEMA's building concentration camps and the troops are down here and they're going to start taking Americans with guns and putting them in these camps. You know, it's just crazy. Yeah. And of course, it never happens. And so so here's the other thing. People don't say, you know what? I was wrong.
Yeah.
They double down.
Yeah, they never back down.
They don't back down. Nope. They double. So again, cognitive dissonance. This was discovered by a psychologist named Leon Festinger in 1954. On December 21st, 1954, Dr. Festinger, as a young professor, accompanied a UFO cult to the top of a mountain who were waiting for the mothership to come at midnight. December 21st, 1954, and he was interested in seeing what will happen when prophecy fails. This is the title of his famous book, When Prophecy Fails. And will they just go home and go, well, that was a dumb idea. Shouldn't have sold my house. No, they, you know, well, first of all, you know, it's midnight, nothing. Okay. What time have you got, Bob? You know, well, maybe it was West Coast to Pacific time, not, you know, Midwest time. And then, no, we miscalculated. It's tomorrow night. So they went back up the next night. No, maybe it was next year. We, you know, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, eventually they faded away. But in the short term, they doubled down on their beliefs. They,
right.
They went and enthusiastically recruited.
Did they just say, oh, well, we're off by a year? I mean, is it like Oral Roberts? Wasn't it Oral Roberts who said, God's going to come take me home if we don't raise $1 million, and then they don't do it? So, well,
eight
God's going to give
us 8 million,
another 6 months.
Yeah. Well, they have a number of rationalizations, you know, that we miscalculated the date, or this was just a test of our faith and we passed the test. So he spared us, or we prayed and that helped. Or this is my favorite one. It did happen spiritually. So we're now in a new spiritual age. This is it. It did happen. Didn't you notice?
Yeah, or like the Mayan calendar. You know, you don't hear anyone talking about that anymore.
Nope. December 21st, 2012 came and went. Here we are.
Well, you know, obviously, I think the media enables these things. It's amazing. You have channels like the History Channel, which used to be legitimate history. Now all they run is, what is it? The
Ancient Aliens.
Yeah, Ancient Aliens.
Okay, there's a little thing about it. So that's H2, History Channel 2.
Yeah.
History Channel 2, you can just buy airtime and air, you know, production company can just buy the airtime and air whatever they want.
Oh,
so there's no History Channel like committee of fact checkers or editors that are screening. Like, they just put on whatever's on there. And that guy, I always forget his name,
interesting,
Greek guy, you know, they just raise the money and they just produce this show and stick it on there.
So Ancient Aliens is not a legitimate History Channel show.
No.
Okay, so it's basically an infomercial for crazies.
That's right.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I didn't know that.
But even the History Channel itself, though, I mean, to be fair, you know, television is a series of commercials with blank spots in between. They have to be filled with programming to keep people from the clicker. And that's why the History Channel went through its, you know, all Hitler all the time stage, and then UFO stage, and then the Bigfoot stage, and conspiracy stage, alien stage. You know, they just, they're just cycling. Now they have, you know, people, I don't know what they do with that. They're doing stuff that has nothing to do with history now.
Well, yeah. Yeah. And what was it? Last season, they had a whole series on trying to find Hitler and where they were trying to track him down in South America something like that.
Yeah. Well, that was another conspiracy theory. Yeah. You know, Hitler was still alive. So there's something about the even more than some of the other conspiracies about the myth of the sort of resurrection myth that, you know, the king will come back. Mm. You know, this is not just Jesus is the, you know, that's the most famous resurrection myth, but there's lots through history. Yeah. I mean, you know, on the frivolous side, you know, Elvis didn't die or Marilyn's still alive or Hitler's still alive. but there's this idea that, again, like Princess Di, you know, no one thinks that, you know, people that die in automobiles in America from drunk driving and speeding, no seatbelt. but if it's somebody famous, it's like, we have this idea that maybe they didn't really die, that they might be alive still somewhere. And it's a little bit like they may come back.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because in so many of these cases, like the Princess Di conspiracy, if I was going to kill someone, that's the worst way to try and murder someone in a car crash. They can easily survive it. You know, no one in these situations other than JFK ever seems to die from just a bullet,
you know? Right,
or something rational.
Yeah, I mean, just imagine plotting the assassination of Princess Di. Okay, so we'll get her driver slightly drunk.
Yeah.
And then maybe he won't have quite, and then we'll like have a car behind him, and maybe this will cause him to veer off. And this is foolproof. What could go wrong?
You know, well, yeah, conspirators must be the luckiest people in the world for these things to come together. Well, I'm curious, in the media, are there some people? There's Alex Jones. There's what is it? Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell, George Norrie. Who is there? Someone who's in your mind is the worst offender as far as fueling this nonsense?
Oh, Alex Jones is the worst. Really? He and Jesse Ventura, probably the two that I like to say, they never met a conspiracy theory they didn't believe or accept or like. It just seems anything and everything. And again, if everything is a conspiracy, then nothing's a conspiracy. Yeah. It can't all be a conspiracy because most of them conflict with one another.
Yeah.
And so that, you know, that's the worst. Although I think they're so far out there, the average person is not, you know, taken in by that.
But they also, you know, they're dangerous in that they couch it in at least this thin veneer of legitimacy, of plausibility. They're not talking about Bigfoot and aliens and stuff. They're talking about plausible non-supernatural conspiracies.
Yes.
And plus, you know, you have the former governor of Minnesota. It kind of
Navy
lends
SEAL
some credibility.
He was there, right? So he definitely does that, because when I was on a show recently, I've been on a show a couple times, you know, he kind of pulls the authority Trump card. Like, listen, Shermer, I was in the Navy SEALs. I can tell you what these people do behind. When we're over in a foreign country, let me tell you what goes on. I can't, you know, it's, how can I refute that? I wasn't in the Special Forces. So, you know, but most Special Forces people don't believe that. So, and most people that work in government, they don't believe these things. So, they were there. So why don't they believe it?
Are conspiracy theories just harmless junk food for the brain, like watching reality TV, or are they genuinely dangerous?
Well, it depends on which ones. I think most of them are just brain candy. It's just sort of fun, I guess, in a way. Think of it like, you know, getting your astrology read as a form of entertainment. Yeah, that's harmless. But the problem is, if you believe that, what else do you believe?
Mm-hmm.
If you believe the 9/11 truthers or whatever, you know, look, we live in a democracy. Hopefully we have informed voters.
Yeah.
The myth of the rational voter, maybe that's true. Maybe it is a myth. But, you know, so if you believe 9/11 is an inside job, you know what? Okay, so here's my concern. If you're going down that rabbit hole, again, you're missing probably the real stuff that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things that, you know, do we really want this person elected? Or, you know, if they are elected, you know, are they really going to do this or that? And the stuff they're doing is not big, sexy stuff like, and we're going to take over the world. It's just like, well, we're going to channel some funds, some foreign aid to this particular country, like Saudi Arabia. Really? Should we be doing that? You know, should we at least have a public debate about that? You know, that's where the action is. It's not as sexy, but it's important.
But you do have cases like, Nazi Germany and the burning of the Reichstag, where, you know, once you start to believe that there's some sinister hand at play, you start casting about looking to find someone to blame.
Absolutely. You know, that example, the burning of the Reichstag, right. Again, they blamed it on this communist guy, but, you know, the Nazis did it. That's a false flag operation.
Yeah, yeah. And like I said, it concerns me that when you have people that are angry and disaffected and feel like they're getting short shrifted, that they're looking for someone to blame. And it seems to me that conspiracy thinking is becoming more and not less mainstream today.
I think that's correct. I think it's more mainstream. It used to be pretty fringy.
Yeah.
Although, you know, I guess because there's more media access, particularly with the internet. Yeah. But after Pearl Harbor, for example, there was a big conspiracy theory about that Roosevelt either orchestrated it,
right,
or him and Churchill orchestrated it, or they knew
still
about
buy
it.
That.
They knew about it and let it happen, mm-hmm, you know, in order to galvanize the American public because of the American Firster movement was pretty strong behind Lindbergh.
Yeah.
People went back and looked at all the intelligence and said, look, here's one dated such and such, you know, October of 41. It says the Japanese might attack Hawaii. Oh, we should have known. We knew. See, they knew. But again, what you forget is the tens of thousands of pieces of intel about what the Japanese, yeah, might or might not do, which is the right one. You,
yeah,
don't know until it happens.
Right.
And
right,
there's that famous memo from Condoleezza Rice, August 9th, 2001. Osama bin Laden to attack U.S. on, you know, U.S. soil. Whoa. So Bush knew. Okay. Bush got hundreds of pieces of intel every day about terrorist attacks all, yeah, over the world. Which is the right one?
Yeah. How do you know which one to assign credibility
to? You don't.
Yeah. Well, should we worry about the influence of irrational conspiracy thinking on legitimate government policy?
Yes. And hopefully whoever gets elected, Congress and Senate and president, they don't go too far.
Yeah.
Because if you buy a lot of that stuff, then maybe you make decisions on foreign policy, for example, that's not rational.
Yeah. Along those lines, it would seem unusual if Donald Trump didn't pop up at some point in the conversation. Here we have a likely nominee of a major political party who has gone on the Alex Jones show, just like you. So you have something in common with Donald Trump. He tacitly spreads misinformation and in many cases deliberately advances conspiracy theories, such as the misconception that vaccines cause autism. Ted Cruz is ineligible to run for president. He spent tens of thousands of dollars trying to prove that Barack Obama was born in Kenya. He fueled the Justice Scalia assassination theory. And recently, believe it or not, in South Carolina, I don't know if you heard this, he said, when he's elected president, you will find out who really knocked down the World Trade Center.
What? I haven't heard that.
Yeah, and when he was in,
wow,
South Carolina,
wow,
he said, if I win, you will find out who really knocked down the World Trade Center, which implies that
it
the accepted version is,
yeah,
not true. Can you imagine the nightmare of someone who's,
no,
that paranoid and,
yep,
buys into these,
yep,
things having their finger on the button?
Yep, yep. Now, some of those I didn't know about. Some of this is just sort of dirty politics as usual.
Yeah.
That's part of any big presidential campaign. Some of this doesn't surprise me. I think Trump is way out there on that. Of course, you never know when he says stuff what he really means, which is itself worrying. I suspect he's posturing and just saying stuff to get media attention.
Yeah. Well, before we go, let's just real quick lightning round run through a couple of the most popular theories,
yeah,
that are out there these days, most of which are fairly recent ones. Chemtrails, that's one of my favorites. A while back, I was dating a well-known TV news reporter here in LA, and her whole job was to investigate and report the truth. But when we would go for a walk or we'd be on a hike, she would point up at the sky at condensation trails from planes and tell me that that's the government spraying us.
Yes. Yes.
Why would they be spraying us? Why?
Oh, well, the theory is that, there's a couple of theories. One is that you're trying to dumb down the American public.
Well, we're doing a good job on our own.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you don't need chemicals for that.
Yeah.
The other one is just that chemical companies want to dump toxic waste, so they just throw it in the atmosphere. Of course, no one has any.
Would that evaporate?
It just sort of spreads out over the atmosphere.
Okay.
They don't have to spend any money burying it and that sort of thing.
Okay.
Of course, no one has any examples of airplanes that are doing this. You know, like here's this.
No pilots.
Here's
have come
this gutted out empty 747 with these huge tanks, or, you know, where would they store all these chemicals? You know, what in the fuel? In the, you know, so yeah, that and also fluoridation, that's another one. You know, there's something about the human psychology with poisons and toxins,
yeah,
that's almost talismanic in nature.
Yeah.
You know, this is the kind of thing, the witch's brew. You know, these people are doing something in the water. You know, that goes back centuries.
But there is fluoride in the water,
yep,
right?
Yep, there is, right. So, the question
is, what is the legitimate reason?
Yeah, the legitimate reason is just for dental health.
Okay.
You know, it just keeps cavities. So, I mean, when they started putting fluoride in water, you know, the number of cavities went dramatically down.
What would be the sinister purpose of fluoride in the water then?
Well, again, getting rid of bad chemicals or just, you know, controlling the population.
So they're disposing of chemicals by putting it in our water and saying it's a fluoridation.
Right.
Okay. Okay. Well, that's nice. Sandy Hook, the Obama administration hired actors, I guess, to stage a mass shooting as a pretense to begin taking our guns away. What about that one?
Yeah, well, talk to the parents of the children that were shot. They'll answer that one for you. But in short, of course, nothing happened in terms of gun control. So every time there's a shooting, there's a conspiracy theory that Obama did it so that he could take away our guns. Did he take away our guns? No. Could he take away our guns? No.
Yeah.
You know, if anything, it had the opposite effect. You know, gun sales go up, ammunition sales go up.
Yeah, it actually did. Yeah.
Yeah, he's the best thing that ever happened to the gun industry. But, you know, it's nonsense.
Bill and Hillary Clinton had Vince Foster murdered and a whole bunch of other people, apparently.
Yes. That was popular in the 90s.
Yeah.
No one talks about that anymore. Maybe if she becomes president, it'll become storming back. You know, the Clinton machine. But look, here's an example where we're missing the real things that go on, the real politicking. And so these other conspiracies about they're having people murdered. Okay, this is a misdirection, not intentionally, but you know you're missing what the real stuff that goes on.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like Hillary's emails and all that. You know, okay, well there are people investigating that, but you know that's where the action is. It's not as sexy as they had people murdered, but.
But can you prove that she didn't kill Vince Foster?
Well, I don't have to prove that she did because the burden of proof is not on me to disprove your crazy theory. The burden of proof is on the conspiracy theorist to provide evidence for, you know, it's the same thing with JFK, you know.
Yeah.
All right, so you don't think Oswald acted alone? No. All right, who do you think did it in addition to Oswald? Because they usually say, yeah, I know Oswald did it. Well, I don't want to say, I don't know who did it, but I know somebody else did. Okay, no, sorry. You actually have to come up with a name and show us the evidence for that particular person.
Well, yeah, the CIA, the Cubans, Castro,
okay,
and the mafia
fine.
All got together.
Yeah,
and,
all right.
That would be the first time that those three coordinated or got along. I mean, wasn't the CIA trying to assassinate Castro?
Exactly, right.
And now they flipped it on JFK?
Right. Yeah, and where's the photographs or memos from these meetings?
Oh, well, okay, you know, they're smart.
They're very
secret.
They don't
take memos.
Right.
You know that.
Right.
You know, it's like the mafia, you know.
It's a little bit like the, you know, the arguments to the more mainstream stuff that Saddam had weapons of mass destruction. Okay. When they couldn't find them, the initial arguments by the Bush administration was, well, they moved them.
Yeah.
And that's how we know they had them because they're not there. No. That's like saying, where are the alien spacecraft? Well, they're in Area 51. Can we go there? Oh, no. It's top secret, and they move them around so you can't find them. Okay. So in other words, what you're saying is you have no evidence, and you're counting that as evidence.
Oh, you know, I just had Don Rumsfeld on about a week ago. And
you
to
did?
This day, about a week ago he came on. He was really lovely, great guy, very good interview. But, you know, to this day he swears that somewhere – those weapons of mass destruction, they're in Syria, or they're still there. They have to be somewhere.
Sticking to that story.
Yeah. I think
but
to
see,
his dying day.
To me, you don't need the story. There's enough bad people doing bad things.
Right.
Why add something that doesn't really get you anywhere? And that's where the real action is that kind of stuff.
Well, I thought that the real action was at the Denver airport. It's cover apparently for a secret underground base for the New World Order.
Yep.
What do you think?
Yep, it's all right there in Denver. Because if you were going to build a New World Order headquarters, why not Denver?
Yeah, what is that all about?
Well,
there are underground tunnels.
Yes,
of all the places, why Denver would that be where they're going to rebuild the world or after the
apocalypse? I forget how that
one
got started, but it's that pattern. It's just like the structure of the airport and the runways and the way the hallways go and you know,
there
the particular statues and paintings and people start. And that's a confirmation bias. Once you have a theory, then you start looking for every little thing that seems to make sense.
Okay, well, last one, probably my favorite one. The moon landing was faked.
Oh, yeah.
How do we know that it was?
Say that to Buzz Aldrin right in front of his face, and you'll see what
he's
happens.
He's a friend of mine, and I know I would know.
Boom! Yeah. Have you seen that video where he pops?
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, well, I was just at the Kennedy Space Center, actually.
Oh, yeah?
Touched a moon rock, yeah. Yeah, well, we know
was it made of plastic?
It didn't really feel all that different, yeah. But, well, we know, first of all, okay. If anybody would, if we faked it, if anybody would blow the whistle on that one, it would have been the Russians.
Yeah.
Because we were in a race with them.
Yeah.
And they tracked the Apollo spacecraft on its way out there. You could track it. You could see it with telescopes. I mean, okay, so we know it happened. Okay,
I'm surprised they didn't try to discredit it.
Yeah, exactly, right. So if they didn't discredit it, then
yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, yeah. And what if people say that there's a rock that in one of the photos that's labeled with a letter C,
oh, yeah.
It's a prop rock or
yes,
something?
Yes, yes. Like the people that staged it were so stupid, they couldn't get the lighting right, and they accidentally put a fake rock in there, and it's just...
Yeah.
So it's an interesting thing. It's like at one and the same time, the people that did this are so clever and intelligent, they could pull off the most complex theory ever. And they were so stupid, they had the stage lighting incorrect, so I could figure out that this was fake because the lighting and the shadows is incorrect. Okay.
Yeah, well, I have to say, I have to think that guy got bumped off. Or
right. Men
know.
In Black.
Yeah,
came to
he
his,
had one job
house.
To do,
right.
Lenny. Come on. well, I'll throw in one more. Bill Clinton has a pact with Donald Trump that he got him to run for president in order to kind of to throw the game
that one
so
I
that
think
Hillary
is, that,
can
that
become
one I
president.
Think is, I think that's true. No. The Clinton machine is so powerful. They could even get the Donald to do things. Somehow I think his ego right. would not allow that to happen.
Yeah. Well, before we wrap up here, have you ever once won an argument with a conspiracy theorist where they actually conceded a point? And said, okay, you're right.
I don't think so. I just hope that they, when they go home, they think, maybe I better rethink that.
Well, Dr. Michael Shermer, the book is called Skeptic, Viewing the World with a Rational Eye. And you can visit Michael Shermer at skeptic.com or at michaelshermer.com. Dr. Michael Shermer, thanks for coming on the podcast.
You're welcome.
Thanks again to Dr. Michael Shermer for coming on the show. You can follow him on Twitter at Michael Shermer or visit him at michaelshermer.com. To subscribe to Skeptic Magazine or to join Michael Shermer's Skeptic Society, go to skeptic.com. And if you'd like to read his new book, Skeptic, Viewing the World with a Rational Eye, I'll include an Amazon link where you can order that and other books by Michael Shermer in the show notes for this episode and on our website at kickasspolitics.com. Or if you'd prefer to listen to the audio version of his book, you can download that for free through that special trial offer just for our listeners at audibletrial.com/kickasspolitics. Now, don't forget to subscribe to Kickass Politics on iTunes and leave us a review. That helps a bunch with our podcast rankings. And if you really want to help out, then donate to our GoFundMe campaign at gofundme.com/kickasspolitics. Or click the donate button on our website at kickasspolitics.com. Your support is always appreciated. Follow us on Twitter at KAPolitics or visit Kickass Politics on Facebook. And while you're there, recommend Kickass Politics to your friends on your social media. And as always, I welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions at comments@kickasspolitics.com. On the next episode, my guest will be the editor of Forbes magazine and former presidential candidate, Steve Forbes. He'll talk about his new book, Reviving America, How Repealing Obamacare, Replacing the Tax Code, and Reforming the Fed Will Restore Hope and Prosperity. So be sure to tune in then. But for now, I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass Politics. This podcast may not be reproduced without express written permission. Kick-Ass Politics is a trademark of Mathis Entertainment, Inc.